Hi, I'm Paul Lisnick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
All of the colors that we experience are the result of these three types of cones firing off in different combinations.
Well, if you know that sound, if you know that beat, you know what we're about to talk about. And if you don't know that sound and you don't know that beat, then you're going to soon want to know what we're going to talk about, because it's something you are going to want to be checking out. We are taking a look at the 20th anniversary in Chicago of a show that you've probably seen a million times. You need to see it a million and one. Blue Man Group. Blue Man Group at the Briar Street Theater, right at Briar and Halsted in the city, and it's been playing there now for 20 years, although 25 years is how long it's been around, with performances all over the world. I mean, they're in Berlin and Japan and Orlando and Vegas, and there's Blue Man, Boston, everywhere you want to go, Blue Man Group, how incredible it is. Now, if you have seen my special or you see my special on Comcast, one of my guests you will have met there in person, in the flesh, and with vision. We're going to introduce him in just a moment, because first, I want to give credit where credit is due. Joining me is one of the founders of Blue Man Group. Yeah, one of the original guys that created the Blue Man Group. I'm just so thrilled he is with us. Phil Stanton. I mean, he is an award-winning writer and producer, a Grammy-nominated musician, an author, a composer, but all that aside, the co-founder of Blue Man Group. Phil, thank you for joining the podcast.
Wow, thanks for having me, Paul. That's quite an introduction. I don't think I can live up to it. But
well, apparently you already have, so it's been your life. And joining you, and this is great, because we were talking just before we went on, and it's a bit of a reunion show, because also Brian Tavener, who is a Blue Man here in Chicago, he's been a Blue Man for 10 years, starting in Boston, following the dreams that he told his mother and father that he wanted to follow. Remember that, Brian?
I do.
And he goes from Boston to Chicago. I've seen him perform several times here in Chicago. And so, Brian, welcome to the podcast after we did the TV show together.
Thank you so much.
And this is like reunion
for
you guys.
Yeah.
So Brian, let me ask you, because you've been doing this for 10 years, and you hear, I know you had mentioned you haven't seen Phil for years, but is it like a big deal for you to know that you're having a conversation with one of the original guys on, or do you just kind of say, nah, I've been there, done that, it's not a big deal?
It's a huge
maybe
deal.
I should get off the call for a moment.
Right, exactly.
No, yeah. I'm just kidding.
We'll see how smart he is with this answer.
Yeah,
right.
No, it's a huge deal, because this is pretty much Phil would be one of the three reasons that I get to pursue my dreams in this job for the last 10 years. So it's like talking to a mentor that's always been there and someone that's designed this amazing life that I've gotten to lead. So Phil, thank you, and thank you for being a part of this with me. This is great.
Now, Phil, you got to share the glory, because, Phil, you've got a couple of friends, Chris Wink, Matt Goldman. This all started in New York. I want to kind of take it back to the beginning a little bit, because people see Blue Man Group now and they just think it's always been this. That's not the original name of this show. Can you take us back to the beginning? See, I can ask Brian and some other guys, as I did my TV special, about how this started, but you're the guy. Talk to me about walking the streets of New York and this emerging from your heads.
Well, you know, it's always interesting. It's hard to actually remember where things came from, because so many things were just kind of intuitive choices. And you kind of nailed it. It wasn't performance at the beginning. We just got Bald and Blue for some reason. I'm not sure any of us can really remember. I think Chris, my partner Chris, had a dream about a Bald and Blue character maybe, and thought that, wow, that would be equally as shocking to a businessman on Wall Street as it would be to, you know, somebody who had an outrageous mohawk outfit on. You know, it would be kind of equally shocking, and kind of, you wouldn't know where to put it, how to categorize it. And so that's kind of how it started. It just started walking around a little bit a few times. And then we, I think one of the first things we realized, because I think early on we wanted to say something about being part of a community, and instead of, you know, kind of an alienated sort of individual all on your own. And so we started drumming, because we thought that expressed something about kind of a tribal past. So right off the bat, we started to try to have as much content as we could revealed through form, you know, And that's why the Blue Men, that's why they all three look so much alike. That's why they're three. It's the smallest number that can form a group. And, you know, so many things began to flow from some of those early intuitive choices. You know, we gave meaning to them almost afterwards. I wish we could say we were smart enough to figure it out beforehand. But, you know, a lot of it we just said, wow, this seems really cool. Let's do that. And then we'll figure out why it was good later if it turned out being good.
So you guys opened in 1991, Astor Place Theater. I've read, you know, there's a book about you. I've read it. I mean, it's part of my preparation. And so it sounds like one of the suggestions or theories isn't true. It says the reason you decided to ultimately call it Blue Man Group, because Blue Man sounds like human. And when I asked the guys in the TV special there too, I got kind of a, well, maybe and maybe not. But it sounds like, Phil, you're saying not necessarily. It's not really why Blue Man became the name.
Well, no, I think that actually is right. I mean, it's like the most obvious way to name it because of the color. But we did want to say something about humanity. That's ultimately what the Blue Man is here to shed some light on. He's there to kind of, reveal some of the things that we all have in common, you know, and the things that make us all flourish as human beings, like our curiosity. We've always felt it's so important as human beings just to stay curious. So the Blue Man sort of embodied that. We try to infuse that kind of curiosity into everything we do and remaining creative, you know, no matter what field you're in, remaining, trying to think outside the box, you know, when you can. And the other part of it I've already mentioned is like being part of a community, you know. And it's been about kind of those three things all along.
And of course, the senses as well, right? I mean, community, senses, all of that. Brian, let me come to you. So one of the things, and we have to talk to people who haven't necessarily seen Blue Man Group, so I want you to kind of explain what it is people experience, but you guys don't talk. In fact, when you're in Blue, I believe you're not permitted to talk, and I know I had to interview you guys.
Yeah.
Well, except, right, but basically interview you guys outside of costume, so to speak. But talk to me, so I mean, you auditioned for this thing, and there's all year round, there's various auditions for the show, and I happened to pass a recent one, and I see, because I live near there, and I see this line of guys, down the street, and I was going to walk by and just go, you have no idea what you're in for over there. Good luck to you catching marshmallows in your mouth. But, Brian, talk to me about what brought you to the show, why you wanted to do it, and what is the experience for audience members like who come for the first time?
Well, to answer that first question, what's so funny is it so much relates to what Phil was just saying about the origin of the character. I didn't necessarily start out with an intention to be a Blue Man. I pretty much found my Blue Man by happening upon the job, upon the opportunity. I had submitted an application and just was looking to reach for the stars, as I put, my family had inspired me to do so. And it turned out that I worked in the character, and the character kind of found me. So it's a kind of a meta relationship to the origins of the show in the first place, which also brings us to the whole point of the show, which is this celebration. Why define why we're all here? Who is to say what is the driving force behind why we're here, why we're next to each other, why we're in a community, why we have to pass each other on the street? It's more about celebrating the fact that we are. And I think the show, for me, personally, is just a complete enjoyment of each other's company, of all the strange people that we surround ourselves with in life that we don't even control half the time. And so it's bringing everyone together for this common celebration of life.
And without wanting to, I'm not going to give a lot of away, but I don't think I'm giving anything away when I say that some of the things people experience during the show, it's everything from watching Blue Men eating Captain Crunch cereal to popping, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of marshmallows in the mouth to maybe, in fact, it happened to me during a show, getting a bunch of chewed up Toblerone placed in my hand. All of these things sound like they're disconnected. They're unconnected. They don't go together. But Phil, it sounds like, and from what Brian's saying, they're quite connected. There's this ongoing and building message from the beginning of the show, certainly, that ends with community at the end.
Yeah, well, I think almost all of the show can be put into two categories, really. It's either revealing the things that kind of make us appear to be separate or make us appear to be alienated from one another. Those tend to be like the things that deal with technology, or the things that deal with some of our products in the world that, Captain Crunch doesn't really nourish our our bodies. So the blue man, through his innocence, uses it as a drum.
Wait, is that is that true statement? Captain Crunch really doesn't nerd, because I kind of like Captain Crunch.
Well, I don't know.
That's another whole issue.
Say
okay,
that on the air probably. Well,
I get it.
Said. but everything is like about, you know, forces that keep us separate or the things that we all have in common, you know. And you know, the point of the marshmallow piece is like it's a simple kind of everyday pop cultural thing. But in the blue man's hands, it turns into a method of expression. And it's in a very humorous way. But the real point is about the creative moment and the fact that we all share that as human beings.
And Brian, by the way, when you do these things, when there's marshmallows being, you know, caught and all that, the people who are in the show, because listen, we have people probably listening to this if auditions come up again who may want to check this out and go. So what kind of skills do you need to be in that line? It's not about singing. It's not about dancing, right? Though that sort of, and although it is about acting, even without words, it's clearly about acting. But do people need to be sort of... Go ahead.
It's a little more. I was lucky enough to be a part of this last open call in Chicago, and something that became just clear to me is it's a little less about acting, and it's a little bit more about reacting and enjoying what is real about the exact moment that you're in, every single second that you're experiencing something within the confines of this show. You are sharing with the audience, and you're trying to pay attention to what actually is happening, not presenting something that we've planned beforehand, which is what makes the show so appealing to go see multiple times. It's never going to be the same, no matter what, because you can't control the reality of the moment. It will always be different.
The other thing you can't control.
That's the main skill.
Yeah. You also involve people from the audience. There's a little moment involving Twinkies where audience member a member is critical. And Phil, let me ask you again. I don't know if word passes down to the blue men around the world who do this, but you got to get the right person, right? You can bring somebody up there who makes that segment really fantastic, but if you pick the wrong person, it's got to be torture for the blue men.
Yeah. I'll tell you, that's one of the most fun aspects of the show for me when I was a performer. Because you don't always know that you're going to get it right, you know, but it does happen in the moment. It really is a choice that happens in the moment, and it's all about that person's energy and how they react and whether it seems like they are suspending their disbelief in the moment, you know, that this character might be real, you know. So it's all of those things. And you know, you're like it's a high wire act at that moment, you know, and it's happening in real time, and you know, there's a pace that has to be followed and everything, and it's just one of the most exciting moments in the show for me.
And by the way, I should ask, so do you or Matt or Chris, do any of you ever show up again and like, hey, I'm doing this thing tonight, or is that over?
That's a little bit over for us, and there are a couple of reasons for it. It's it really does take kind of constant kind of conditioning and knowledge of the show in terms of rehearsal and stuff like that. And our duties have kind of moved past that. And, you know, frankly, I'm a little bit older now than most of these guys, and it's a little bit of a younger man's show at this point, but I do miss it. It was just exhilarating to be on stage, you know, and especially in this show, you know, there's a type of immediacy and, you know, because there's no fourth wall. And like Brian was stating, a lot of different variables can happen and anything can happen, really. So it's I do miss it. I'm at my core, I'm still a performer.
And Brian, you know, there's a segment in the show that involves cell phones, which obviously was not around 25 years ago. Not the iPhone anyway, in terms of the way that plays out. So can you talk to me, knowing that Phil's on the line with us, but talk to me about how you guys interact, about how the show has to kind of stay with the times. It's a good question for Phil, too, but I want to start with you, Brian. You know, you got to stay with the times, right? You can't be up there doing something that was technology 25 years ago, but nobody cares about today.
Well, definitely. And as Phil was saying, we have to relate to the technology because it is a pretty important element with how we all are dealing with each other day to day. But the Blue Man doesn't necessarily banish technology from his world. What it is trying to accept these beautiful inventions. I mean, really, can live without their cell phone now. If I didn't have my cell phone, I couldn't be talking to you right now. I mean, there's so many things. So we're not saying don't out with the phones, no more phones. We're saying, okay, we have these objects. Let's use them to our advantage, but not let them get in the way of our natural human instinct for connection. So there's a way you can use these things sparingly and strategically to pump up that connection, to support what we're all going for here. And this is especially in the show. I mean, we just have some really fun segments with these giant iPhones, iPads is what we call them. And it tends to really, I think, get in there with people that they do understand that oh, this is interesting. We don't necessarily, you know, have to be separating ourselves with these objects. We can be using them for a greater good.
And Phil, are you still involved in that creative process? I know you're not performing anymore, but when you're out and about, or do you see something and you go, this is a thing. This needs to make its way into the show. Are you still playing a role in that?
Oh, yeah. That's kind of what my role is more these days. You know, as a producer and a writer, as an artist as well, no longer, you know, like I was saying before, as a performer necessarily, although I do get up on my feet in workshops and play the character in that way. But yeah, that's all we do, is trying to figure out, you know, what's the pulse? What would the blue man notice about the world right now? You know, what would he think was important? I think that's the thing, that the show can never be a snapshot of a point in time. It's got to feel like it's dynamic and it's current, you know, it's constantly taking a video of our lives, yeah, in a way.
And Phil, I'm curious too. So when you guys created this again, you know, Lower East Side, New York, doing your thing, and I know you probably get asked this a lot, but did you see it coming? I mean, did you just say, here's something, let's just see if this works, and maybe we'll have a gig for a few weeks? Could you imagine that 25 years later worldwide, 20 years later in Chicago, you got a bunch of guys doing your thing, keeping the show going, and there's no end in sight?
No, I mean, that's probably the question we get asked most frequently, and you know, we could not have seen it coming at all. You know, I would have thought we'd be at the Astor Place Theater for a few months and then maybe go on a college campus tour or something like that. And then, you know, who knows, might move on to the next thing. Although I can say I wanted it to be my life's work. I felt like it was broad enough that it could provide kind of a creative outlet for my whole life. So I'm really happy that has happened. But no, we would have never envisioned it.
And Brian, for people who are actors, you know, you even if you're on Broadway, you sign a contract. I don't care if you're, you know, starring in Hamilton or Dear Evan Hansen. You sign a contract, you do your thing for, let's just call it a year, you move on. And when you talk to those actors, they say, you know what, it's enough. You've been doing this for 10 years, which means there. And by the way, that is true for so many of the Blue Men. It's not like you're weird. So many of the Blue Men have been in this for years and years and years. What is the difference, do you think, between somebody who is performing in Blue Man Group and somebody who's performing in any other Broadway or stage show, where the notion of doing that role for 10 years is just not even a possibility?
Well, it's the people. It's definitely, number one, the people I work with, the cast, the crew, all the way up to the top, to Phil and Chris. It's the tribe. This is a family. These people have changed my life. This show has changed my life. It continues to do so. I'm growing in my reality with this show. And the reason is I get to perform a character that is not wholly written by someone else. Sorry, Phil, but is mostly given parameters. And then I get to be Brian Taverner as a Blue Man nightly. And it's a growing experience. I get to share this stage with the different audience, a different group of laughs every night. I mean, I spend my life around laughter. It's a beautiful thing.
And you know,
I'm totally grateful for that.
And I have to ask you, Brian, you know, for me, look, I'm on the air, and if I walk down the street, the odds are I'm going to get recognized for doing what I do at WGN. And people, but you have a costume, and we talked about this in the television show, but the odds of you guys getting recognized, much less so. I know it happens, but I have to tell you, is that something, do you appreciate the anonymity that generally comes with being in Blue Man Group, or do you kind of want to go up to some people and go, I'm one of those guys?
Oh, no, it's so great. The anonymity is another reason to stay in. I mean, it's part of the show. The show is about letting the ego go. We're all one in the same here. And I've learned quite a bit about that in my life, letting that go, dropping that ego, which you can also use for your anonymity out in public. I mean, I don't need to be recognized for what I'm doing up there. In fact, I am lucky to be on the line with Phil here because I didn't write this show. You know, this deep down, this is not my show. I'm just lucky to be a part of it. And I love being able to, it's a Superman moment. I'm able to leave the theater. I see a person that I may have gifted a smudge of blue paint on their cheek at the CVS, and I get to just know that I know them from about an hour ago, and they don't know me at all. I went back in the phone booth and put my suit and glasses back on. So you have these moments all the time. It's a gift. It's amazing. I love it.
And by the way, Phil, if your next project is like a one-man show for a middle-aged guy, I'm happy to be the person you develop that show for.
All right.
But let me ask you, as we begin to wrap up, I'll let people know where to get tickets, although they probably know because they see it anyway. But, hey, are you Chris, Matt, still good buddies, still planning something? Or have you gone your own ways?
Oh, yeah.
Where do you guys stand?
No, we're very good buddies. Matt has moved on from Blue Man Group and concentrates solely on the school we founded, which just went into its eighth grade this year. So Matt is like a...
Do you want to mention the school? Tell us about the school.
Well, it's called blueschool.org. You can look at it at blueschool.org, uh-huh. But it is it's a private school that we started in lower Manhattan, and it has a TWOS program through eighth grade now, and that's the way it has been envisioned. And it's just... We feel like we're part of this worldwide dialogue that wants to kind of change education, from being just something that fills our minds up to something that kind of teaches to the creator in all of us and mm-hmm. the person that wants to be a community member. And it very much mirrors the show and the concepts and the themes of the show, you know, because it really is about, you know, curiosity and creativity and being part of a community are kind of the three main points of the school. So, but it's a school, not a Blue Man training school.
And is it a school
does that. Chris and I still concentrate on Blue Man totally. That's all we do.
Gotcha. And so that's your focus. I have one other question about the school. Is it something, do kids go there as an alternative to going to some other public school, or it's something, it's an extracurricular?
It's an alternative. It's a full school.
Wow, how very cool. Brian, maybe you and I can go in there.
Sure, yeah.
we might use the education. And Brian, you've been doing this for 10 years. Maybe an unfair question, but is this something 10 years from now, whatever? I mean, do you get such energy from the audience every night that you just no end in sight for you?
No end in sight for me. I would hope so. The best part about this show is they encourage artistic projects outside of the show as well, so I can – make my own music. I can, try to go audition for a quick little one part film. I have the time and the energy and the creative outlet to be able to do that as well. And so, yes, I mean, I no end in sight for me. I couldn't possibly imagine a life without celebrating with my family that I found in Blue Man and the audience every night.
Well, I got to tell you, 20 years in Chicago, 25 years, and still counting. You can get tickets by going to blueman.com/Chicago, blueman.com/Chicago, and that's probably because you can put lots of other cities after that slash and go see them in a city that you're visiting or living in, like Vegas and Boston and other planet places. But primarily, I think we have a Chicago audience, possibly, so we'll just say blueman.com/Chicago. Phil Stanton, an honor to have you join us, really, because it's just what you've done is amazing, and I'm glad I actually got to tell you that personally.
Oh, thank you.
And Brian Taverner,
thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely, Brian Taverner. Love your performance. I've seen it many times. We'll see it many more. And hey, guys, let's just go out with the reminder again, blueman.com Chicago. Let's go out with a little more rhythm and music that my producer will have ready to go. And with that, I'm going to say thank you for joining me on Behind the Curtain podcast.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Yeah, stormy weather. 'Tis the season. Storms, hurricanes. beautiful Lena Horne singing that number, but we're actually talking about what she's singing about, which is the power of the hurricanes and what is going on in this climate that we are living in. Joining me, WGN meteorologist Demetrius Ivory. You watch him every day on the WGN News, midday news at 11 and 12 and 4. And he fills in for Tom Skilling, so he's basically on 24 hours a day usually. And now he joins us here in the podcast. Demetrius, for the first time, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me here. I feel honored.
Well, it's great to have you. You're a wonderful member of the team. And so I have to ask you, these hurricanes, we had Harvey, we have Irma, more down the pike. Is it my imagination, or are these once in 500-year storms coming more often, and why?
No, it's not your imagination, and it's actually bigger than that. You know, remember the flooding that we had in our area, what, 100-year flood, right? The flooding in portions of the Mississippi River Valley. No, it's not. It is climate change. I mean, it's generally, when you're dealing with warmer temperatures, especially in the ocean, because remember, the ocean is kind of almost like a battery in terms of heat and warmth. You know, the temperature in the air can go up and down really easily, but with the ocean, it kind of warms down into the depths and kind of saves that heat. So when you're talking about warmer sea surface temperatures, you're typically talking about some significant heat there. So when you're dealing with warmer ocean water, you have the potential for these stronger storms. I mean, you're always probably going to get hurricanes. You know, will they be Category 4, Category 5? And we've had two major hurricanes, you know, basically in about 2 week span. And that hasn't happened for a long time. So, no, it's not something that that's just coming out of your head.
And so I think about, Demetrius, the people who say there's no such thing as climate change or whatever. So what do you say to people who say, look, these things happen? It's not man or woman causing this. It's just where we are right now. It's a cycle. This is not a climate change thing. It's just what's happening.
Well, first off, what I always like to do, when someone says something about climate change, when they say their opinion, the first thing I like to do is ask them exactly what did they go to school for? If it's a politician and he majored in, you know, political science or, you know, something, then automatically that's a notch down. I kind of take it with a grain of salt. By and large, the true scientists, climatologists, meteorologists, we know the globe is warming. You can't argue with the thermometer. The globe is warming, but we can't necessarily prove that we are the driving factor, you know, solely the driving factor, or even just kind of the major component to this warming. We can't prove that, you know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, and we probably won't be able to for a long time. It's going to take a lot of data, and that is kind of what a lot of the folks who say that climate change is a hoax kind of fall on or kind of lean on, that we can't prove it yet because, well, we haven't, you know, we've only been on the Earth for, you know, a few thousand years.
Well, then, okay, and what about when they say, so look, whether it is or whether it isn't, what are we supposed to do? I mean, you know, ending the pollution or, you know, better cars, whatever. Are we really going, when we're seeing these kinds of storms, are we really going to make a difference that's even going to get in the way of what's happening? Is it too late to break this pattern?
Well, that's up to debate. Well, since 1970, the global surface temperature rose at about 0.17 Celsius, which is about a third of a degree Fahrenheit per decade. And that's twice as fast as the entire period when you go back to like 1880 when we have records. Now notice that we're kind of taking out a lot of the data where we're using kind of theoretical ways to figure out what the temperature was. We're using core samples and tree rings and things like that, because that's been disputed so much that we can just say, hey, let's just look at the numbers, let's just look at what we actually measured. And, you know, 2016, the global temperature was about 1.69 Fahrenheit, which it rose above the average, almost 2 degrees above the average. So, and that was the warmest year since 2015, which was the previous warmest year. So, you know, if you keep flipping on a light switch and the light cuts on, how long does it take before you kind of figure out that that's why it's turning on?
Yeah. I have to ask you, so here's some of the dumb things we've seen just in the political world. One was, a senator who, his proof as he stood on the Senate floor was to say there's no such thing as global warming because he showed, and what he had in his hand, you might remember this, he had a snowball in his hand, and he showed that to the president of the Senate, saying, you see, there's no global warming, this is snow. What is the answer when people say global warming must mean it's warming and therefore no snow? So if there's snow, we don't have global warming.
When he did that, I wanted to take that snowball because here's why. He's talking. There's global warming and there's local warming, right? Or local cooling. We have had a relatively, I think it's just starting to tiptoe, cool summer in Chicago. But that has nothing to do, it has something to do with it. It goes into the bucket, but it's literally like less than a drop in a bucket
when
it comes to global surface temperatures. And when you're talking about climate change, before, I think in the 80s, when this was kind of brought to the forefront and things like that, people kind of thought everything warms up. Now we're realizing that doesn't necessarily happen. Some parts warm up, some parts cool down, some parts get wetter, some areas of the world get wetter, some areas of the world get drier. As a planet, the temperatures are going up. But locally, you could have this area, this pocket where it's just wetter, this pocket where it might actually be cooler, but this and many pockets where it's going to be warmer. So you can't look at things like, look at how much snow we got in the mountains of California. There's obviously no global warming, because the flip side may be what's going on in China, what's going on downrange, and things like that. We're able to grow corn in latitudes, and they're going to be growing it clear up into Canada very soon. If you go ask farmers, if you just drive west and ask farmers, they'll let you know their growing season is much longer, and they're able to grow plants that they were never able to grow this far north.
So someone listening to Demetrius would say, well, then what's the problem with that?
Well, the problem with that is if we're controlling it or if we're driving that, then we're really playing with something that we have that will eventually come back to bite us, I think.
Are we talking destruction of mankind? Is that what we're talking about, an end of the planet? Or are we simply talking about adjustment of living style?
I don't believe the doomsday. I don't believe that. I believe that the Earth has been around way longer than we have, and the Earth will figure out a way to correct the problem. But there are some areas that will, greatly benefit by global warming. Now, anywhere along the coast, if you're talking about ocean levels rising, that's not going to be good. But if you are in northern Minnesota, what was land where you probably couldn't grow anything on, you're probably going to be able to, in who knows how many centuries from now. But then you lose Miami, you lose New Orleans, you lose parts of L.A., you lose even parts of New York City. It's one of those things where if we're driving it, we definitely need to kind of have a little bit of control over what we're doing, because right now we're just kind of, literally shooting into the sky.
Yeah. So, Demetrius, for people who do believe in global warming, do believe in climate change, what can they do? Somebody listening to us right now says, okay, I get it. I believe you. What do you want me to do?
The first thing you could do is try to lower your carbon footprint, right? I mean, we all say that. And there's a lot of research that has shown that will actually make a difference. Obviously not very much in our lifetime, but if it becomes a habit, if it just becomes just a, nature of people to kind of lower their carbon footprint, of course, that would help. There's a lot of things, industrialization, urbanization, where you're cutting down trees and now you're putting in concrete, which greatly absorbs and then reflects heat. It's not like soil, which basically kind of lets it, kind of works almost like that battery a little bit.
Right.
I do believe that, you should drive energy-efficient cars, try to use your energy-efficient appliances, just try to lower your carbon footprint. But you know what, most importantly, don't vote. I won't say don't vote for anyone who says global warming is a hoax. ask anyone who tells you that the Earth is not warming, that all of the literally that is disagreeing with thermometers that we've had around since 1880, yeah. is completely saying these things are wrong. Challenge them to find out where they got that opinion, and then you know, weigh up. That should really have a lot of weight, I think, as far as who you vote for, at least as far as I vote for. You know, if a guy is giving an uninformed decision about something, then I'm kind of, that's a notch down for him.
Well, whatever the topic. And, of course, when we're talking about a topic like climate change and global warming, that's why we want to come to somebody like you who understands these topics. Demetrius Ivory, the WGN meteorologist that you can catch every weekday at 11 and 12 and 4, and all the times he's filling in for Tom Skilling, and I see him always in the morning, and he's just always around here. And I really wish your wife, Erin Ivory, would just make me dinner along with you. Then we could save on the carbon footprint of cooking. But anyway, that's another discussion.
I think so. I think if she cooks for everyone, then, you know, no one has to use their oven down.
Exactly. And we're saving the world. Demetrius, thank you, my friend. We'll see you shortly.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
All right. Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.